Welcome back. Ian Tattersall is our guest. He is a curator in the Department of Anthropology at the American Museum of Natural History here in New York City, one of the world's great museums. Let us return, please, to where Bill was leading us as we went away. The business of being human and somehow being separate from the evolutionary process leads to some peculiar conclusions.
Well, this is absolutely true, and very many peculiar conclusions have been drawn. Yes, humans are part of the natural world. Yes, humans have evolved to become what they are from ancestors who weren't quite the same. And humans have acquired somehow this extraordinary consciousness, which makes us ask questions about who we are and what we are. But we've come by this honestly, I think. We've come by it as a part of the process of evolution that we see around with us, around us all the time.
Our very consciousness is a part of that?
Our very consciousness is part of that, yes. I think that the consciousness that we're familiar with today has not been around that long, and that certain of our predecessors certainly didn't have it. And so this is a new acquisition, but it's acquired through normal processes of evolution.
You talk about evolution operating at several levels. We tend to think of it within species, but you also say that it applies across species, that species also compete with one another for niches, and that humans fit into that, and particularly going to your the paleoanthropological work you've done. Is that one too many syllables?
I think so.
That the competition among hominid species mm-hmm. goes a long way towards to telling us where we came from and telling us a lot about ourselves.
Yes, competition among species is a major component of the evolutionary process. Traditionally, people have become comfortable with the idea of natural selection, that somehow natural selection, differential reproduction, is driving species along particular lines and along particular paths of change. That is actually only a very tiny part of the picture. And I think the great mechanism in nature is the triage that nature does between species that have evolved.
Before you go further with that, the notion of competition among species mm-hmm. says to me, okay, humans competed with tigers and cave bears. But I think that I'm hearing you say humans competed with other hominids, other similar mm-hmm. creatures to us who are different species but still in the family, if you were.
That's absolutely correct. We have this distorted perspective, I think, by being the only hominid species on Earth today. We think that's natural. We think that that is normal because that's what we are used to.
And you're saying?
But in fact, if you look at the human fossil record, it tells you very clearly that multiple human species have usually populated the Earth.
That's shocking to most of us.
It is. It is shocking because it also implies that in some way humanity eliminated its nearest and dearest. And, you know, that's possibly not the view of ourselves that we most like to have.
Well, you do call us a dangerous species.
Well, we are. And it's very clear that humans are having a huge effect on the world that not even humans can control.
This goes beyond genocide to speciesicide. I mean, and if particularly with respect to the Neanderthals, where mm-hmm. you've done a good deal of work, there's still, my understanding is, a good deal of controversy about who Neanderthals are, or at least some people have one view. There are people who say that there was interbreeding, that humans just biologically overwhelm Neanderthals. And your experience, your work, suggests that there's a different explanation.
That's exactly true. Yes, there are many different interpretations possible, but to me it's absolutely clear that the Neanderthals were a separate species. They were a separate evolutionary entity from ourselves, and that no meaningful exchange of genes could have happened between Neanderthals and the early moderns who came in to disrupt their tranquility in Europe and Western Asia around 40,000 years ago. So the Neanderthals were separate. They'd had a separate evolutionary history. They were a distinctive evolutionary entity, and they did business, naturally enough, a little bit differently from the way that our predecessors, our own direct predecessors, did. The conclusion is that Neanderthals were in some way outcompeted by Homo sapiens. Neanderthals lived in Europe and Western Asia for 200,000 years during many difficult ecological times with the Ice Ages coming and going, and they were very successful. Suddenly, modern humans turn up, and almost as suddenly, the Neanderthals are gone. And I think we have to say that, you know, one of these facts is related to the other.
And they do overlap in time.
They do overlap in time, only relatively briefly, up to maybe 10,000 years. But in 10,000 years, the Neanderthals were gone.
How long have modern humans been distinguishable as a different species? You say the Neanderthals were around for a couple hundred thousand years. We haven't gotten there yet, have we?
No, we haven't. It's a very good question because there are two aspects to being human. One is looking human. One is having human anatomy as we're familiar with it today. And the other aspect is behaving like modern humans.
One's biology and one is culture?
Well, not necessarily. I think there's a biological basis to this whole thing, even if we don't understand exactly what that basis was. But the essential thing is that the two aspects, the behavioral aspect and the anatomical aspect, seem to be out of kilter. Anatomically, modern humans were around, as far as we can tell, for 100,000 years, since about 100,000 years ago, or more, even 150,000 at the outside, probably, though. And human behaviors, modern human behaviors, didn't come in until, maybe 100,000 years later, at about 40 to 60,000 years ago.
I want to back up just a little bit. I'm not sure it's clear to people what a species is. You refer to Neanderthals as being a species and Homo sapien as being a species. How does a scientist distinguish one species from another?
Oh, if only scientists knew how to do this. You know, this is one of the great questions. Species are essentially the basic kinds of animals that we recognize, but what exactly a species is very hard to put your finger on in many cases. Species are the largest reproducing groups of organism, the essential capacity, if you want, of individuals belonging to the same species is the ability to interbreed among themselves.
That's a bottom line.
That's the bottom line. It gets complicated because the barriers to interbreeding may come in a lot of different forms. And the actual amounts of capacity, biological capacity, to exchange genes is not sort of a fixed, measurable quantity. And particularly, of course, when you come to Neanderthals, and other extinct species, by definition, they can't interbreed. We can't use the interbreeding criterion as a way of recognizing them as species or not.
We can or cannot?
We cannot. With extinct species, there is no direct measure of interfertility. So it's sometimes very hard to tell, and that's where the arguments come from. Neanderthals, could they have interbred with modern humans? We don't know for sure that they could not have interbred, but the amount of anatomical difference between them certainly suggests very strongly that this was the case.
I have the sense of, in my own terms, that a lot of the work that you do and you and your colleagues do is sort of reverse engineering.
Reverse?
Trying to take what is available, what we know right now, take a few hints and move that back up through time and up through the geological, the archaeological, the physical record, but it also seems that it's reverse engineering, against evolution, upstream with evolution, which I would think would be very difficult, and also against emergent properties, things that you can't predict it going forward, and I would think it'd be a challenge going back upstream.
Well, if we're working against emergent properties, reverse engineering and evolution, we'll have to do that when we come back in just a moment with Ian Tattersall. We're delighted to be with him at the American Museum of Natural History. Bill Russell and I welcome you being with us when we return.